It's the final days of the Big Deal Clearance Event at Academy Sports and Outdoors. Get up to 75% off great gear across the store when you take an extra 50% off already reduced items. This event ends on Monday, so make sure to shop now before these deals are gone. Visit your local Academy store or academy.com to save big on the gear you need to have fun out there this year. Don't miss your last chance to get up to 75% off the best brands and styles in sports and outdoors.
The McDouble is here to add some sizzle to your day. And now, you can enjoy it with McDonald's 4-for-4 deal. Choose between a cheesy McDouble or a delightfully crispy McChicken. Then add 4-piece chicken McNuggets, a small order of crispy fries, and a refreshing medium-sized soft drink like an ice-cold Coke for just $4. Now that's a tasty deal. Swing by and add some sizzle to your day with McDonald's 4-for-4. Price and participation may vary, cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, or however you identify. This is the Infinite Inquisition with your hostess, Seraphine Hurley. And yes, today is actually the 10th of February. You are not tripping, because that's tomorrow, Tripping the Void, on the same station listening to you now, which I have to put in because we will also, as we are today, going to be talking about sexual rights. Yes. And thank you for joining me. I'd like to thank you for your listenership and thank you for making sure that when you do listen that you click like and share. We like that a lot here at UPNTalkRadio.com, 107.7 FM New Orleans. And you guys are awesome. I don't take enough time to tell you guys how awesome you are for hanging in there and hanging on and listening to everything, because that's just amazing to me. And once again, to thank my producer, Mr. Joel Maltalo, who is also now an award-winning radio station owner and producer, which is amazing. So congratulations. So we have to roll on and talk about our sexual rights. And by the way, when we ask for rights, okay, when we are asking and talking about rights, when we are talking about rights, think about it for a second. We want rights not only for ourselves, definitely for ourselves, but for our children and their children and grandchildren and your next door neighbor and your people and friends from church, even your Facebook friends. And it's basically at core, it is a human earthling need, let's say, even if you don't identify as human, you say it's an earthling need. Everybody wants to be loved. Everybody has a sexual something of something, right? So even though this is a subject that not everybody likes to talk about, but it's something that we do need to talk about. We really do, especially in our political climate, as we like to see and think that we are progressive people on an ever-evolving planet full of people. However you do identify, which is not a joke. This show is not a joke. However you identify. When I say that, I generally mean it. I mean, I really do. That people's identification, we should not be judged by how we feel we are. Now, when you're born, your birth certificate is stamped either male or female, right? That you were born into this world. And yes, they're marking your sexual identity because that's how you are perceived when you can't talk. Well, do you have the male parts or do you have the female parts, right? So that's fair. Even though I know there's a bunch of people out there probably saying that it's not fair, but at, like I said, basic. So if we roll the train back to 1964, okay? The 1964 Civil Rights Act already makes it illegal for discrimination to occur on the basis of sex, with which, by the way, you can thank Ruth Bader Ginsburg, okay? And if you don't know Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you should. So the basis of sex, meaning male or female, like I said, people don't like to talk about it. Maybe you don't like to talk about it, but we do need to discuss this. So for male or female, for the good or for the bad. One really super significant thing to note in passing. This bill evidently agree, whether or not they realize it, that the CRA of 64 does not actually provide any special protections based on any kind of gender identity, the male or female, or sexual orientation, which, because of the term sex, which everybody gets squidgy when you say that three-letter word, right? Sex was expansive enough at that time in 1964 to include both, with that they thought there would be no need for the Equality Act at all. So we should all be able to agree that while sex in the 64 CRA referred to the division of all humanity into males and into females, protections not extended to lesbians, gays, bisexuals, transgenders, and as most, I know some, but not most know, people just don't know that this is a struggle that's happened since before the 64 Act. That the reason the 64 Act came into play is because, and I do have to say this, just give me a second, it's because women in the workplace were getting a hard time. Most people wanted women to, and no, this isn't a soapbox rant, I'm just stating this, the reason why, is that women were supposed to be homemakers. They were supposed to be having babies and taking care of the home, and a lot of people still in 1964 thought that we didn't need any kind of law to protect people just on the basis of whether they are male or female. Now, I think we should just throw that out of the window, but because of all of that. So gender identity is a huge thing, and it contains an array of ideation, complication, imagination, and all of its own by itself in and out of. So for the category, if you point to each individual one, right? For the category, it seems kind of limited, well, at least to me, only by the people advocating as well as identifying under gender activist. Because there, for every identity, there's a gender activist, but overall, there's several poignant gender activists, which I'm not going to mention. I'll make you do the homework yourself. But there's some very interesting papers written by these gender activists. And because I want you to think for yourself, because I think that's healthy. You don't have to take my words. But I'm very happy that you're here listening to them and taking in what I have to say with all of the stuff I have researched on sexual rights, because I believe we should have the right to be ourselves. We should have the right to identify however we want to identify, and it shouldn't do anything to our work. It shouldn't do anything to our ability to shop. It shouldn't do anything to our ability to buy homes, have children, things like that, unless you have some kind of heinous criminal record that's proven. It's things should not be based on rumor or be based on how people perceive you based on the way they think you look or they think you act because of the way you identify, which I think is junk. It's complete and utter junk. So on that note of junk, it's a good segue for Facebook, right? Facebook, did you know Facebook actually allows you to choose from no less than 71 genders, in which it could be a lot more, as I should just say that, because I know somebody's going to write me and go, it should be a lot more than that. And I know, I agree. But the male and female is so very last century. Now you can adopt a cornucopia of sexual identities, starting with, of course, when you start in A and go all the way, you go asexual. So for some of you people out there who don't understand what I'm talking about, sexual identity goes like from asexual to hermaphrodite or intersex. and working your way up to gender variant or pangendered. And by the way, only under certain circumstances are there biological or genetic markers for these various departures from what people believe is normal. So normal female, normal this, normal intersex, there is no such thing as normal. Normal is a setting on a appliance, on a washing machine, on a dishwasher. There is no such thing as normal. That's why I'd like people to start thinking. And I mean, it took me a while to understand that I can't just come in and say ladies and gentlemen all the time, because it's not just ladies and gentlemen anymore. That's why I say y'all, or I say folks, because I know some people get a little upset by that. And it's not that I sit here thinking that people are going to be upset because I meant hurtful things by not saying the right thing. It's that I am not exactly new into this world, and I've been trying to change with the times, but still, even for me, and being social and in public all the time, is hard for me to understand, because you can't outrightly actually see people's identities, and you can't, therefore you can't assume a lot of people's sexual identity, because I've seen some very feminine male people, and I've called them accidentally ma'am or miss, and it turns out that it was a him, and that was on me, and I did apologize. But sometimes you get caught up, and no, by no means is that an excuse, but you have to excuse some of us, because we're still learning how to address people. And if it turns into folks and y'all, then I just don't know what else to do, ladies and gentlemen, and however you identify, right? And that by no means is a sarcastic comment either, because what else am I supposed to say? Because if I run down the list, we're going to be here an awfully long time. And I'm just saying, I want fairness for everybody. I want equality for everybody on the basis of jobs and people being able to do the job that they're trained for, that they're good at, and not see people sent home or have their resume not even be seen, because it's on the basis of their identity, which is wrong. And I'm not sorry I'm even saying that. It's wrong to base somebody's ability to work on how they identify, or their ability to get a home on how they identify, or their ability to get a loan on how they identify. How you identify has nothing to do with your ability or your credit. I'm just saying, it just doesn't have anything to do with it. Everybody deserves a chance. Everybody does. Even people who have done things and gone to jail and served their time for it, and if they've proven to be a good, you know, good member of society, then after paying their debt to society through the means that was judged upon them by a panel of their peers, I truly believe that they deserve their chance, right? You should. I know it's mind blowing, but so. And when I talk about biological and genetic markers, some people are actually born intersex or made intersex because of surgeries, or the surgeries that were beyond their control, like children who, like from around the time I was born, let's say, were given sexual reassignment surgery without consent, meaning that they were born a male or a female, and the parents decided, well, they were born male and with both male and female parts, let's say. And then the parents decide, because there has to be a decision apparently, that the parents decide to make the child a male or a female based on the parts, I guess. So I know other people out there have, I know for me, I know people in my life who've been reassigned when they were children and not very happy with the outcome, but what are you going to do? But that happens. And so this person actually comes up as a male, but is a female person. as you would see, the person lives as a male, but the person comes up if you were to do a blood test to find out biologically who this person was. When we're talking about biological markers and genetic markers, the person would come up as a female or a male. So when you check, that's the basis. So I know some of it probably is more confusing when I talk, but I'm just trying to give you a baseline on that. So when you're sitting there thinking about what is normal and what is not normal, and it just makes things more consuming and confusing, and it makes the entire concept of sexuality enormously subjective and fluid, and allows you to just kind of slip into just about anything that you want. But what is truly mind-blowing is that sexual orientation is nowhere defined in any law or anything except for on the basis of sex, meaning if you have male parts or female parts. But that doesn't do anything except for say that you can't discriminate. That's all it says, is that you are not supposed to discriminate. But then again, how do you prove that there was this discrimination? How do you prove it? Now, you know, or you may have figured out by now that everybody, including yourself, like I said before, you have a working definition of sexual orientation in your head, a definition that begins with a male and ends with a transgender or some such thing. But sexual orientation is not defined anywhere in federal law, which I don't personally think should be defined. Now, most righty-tighty people will tell you this means sexual orientation will mean anything you want it to mean. Why don't we just come out and say that it makes us all worried about sexual predators? And that's one of the things that we worry about. Now, when you talk about sexual predators, I'm talking about people who been identified as pedophiliacs or other people who abuse animals, children, other people, people who have raped or done other things to not only human beings, but animals, things like that. So that's either under the categories pedophilia or bestiality. Now, in modern times here, we've got people trying to say that pedophiliacs and people that choose to use bestiality deserve rights. And myself, Seraphine Hurley, I believe that people do deserve rights, but not if you're hurting people. If you're hurting people who have not the ability to consent, I'm cool with everything as long as people have the right to consensualize to it as an adult. If you are in the age of consent within your state or whatever governing body you are under, then that's all well and good. But if you're talking about hurting small children and animals that can't speak for themselves, or hurting somebody who is infirmed or handicapped, that's not okay with me. And I can't say for you, but for me, I can definitely say that these people, if I believe that these people are charged, I'm not going to say, like, you've seen this stuff on Facebook where people go, showing around a picture of this person who is supposed pedophiliac. Well, the person's not been charged. Well, in my book, you have to be guilty after you have gone through due process. You still need to receive due process before people start bringing out the pitchforks and all that other stuff. Unless, you know, somebody else got to them first, and then we don't get to do that. So, and that's between that person and their God. So, but it needs to be said, just because somebody identifies as not heterosexual does not make them a pedophile. It doesn't make them want to hurt children. It doesn't make them hurt animals. And I came across a lot of people in the last 3 months, and it blew my mind. And I know I get my mind blown at least a couple of times a week. But somebody outwardly said at a restaurant, oh, that person's gay, they shouldn't be around children. That is not only an unfair statement, but it's wrong. Unless that person has been charged with something and is serving time for it or something. Number one, we shouldn't be talking about that in public places loudly, because there are children and people around that probably don't want to hear that. I'm just saying, even I keep a muzzle on stuff when I'm in public. I talk about stuff, but if I'm going to talk about sensitive stuff, I either lower my voice where it's not going to be like a stage whisper, or I'm clear across the restaurants where nobody's going to hear me except for the poor waitress. Now, if we're going to hate on people, which I don't think is healthy, number one, make sure you're hating on people who are like partially deserving of it. You know, people who have definitely done something heinous, but even then you need to pump the hate brakes. So I can't get off of this subject because it really kind of tingled me there. It's not cool. And I came across this article from the University of Würzburg in Germany from May of 18. And I'm going to paraphrase it. There was a conference I was held, actually, it was a TED Talk in 2018 with the theme of future societies that featured a presentation from Miriam Heine, a medical researcher. And this is what she had to say, and I quote, according to current research, this is what she said, that pedophilia is an unchangeable, like I said, she said this, that pedophilia is an unchangeable sexual orientation, just like, for example, heterosexuality. I'm still tripped up on this. No one chooses to be a pedophile. No one can cease being one. Now I went to Snopes, and Snopes investigated the report of her remarks and found them to be absolutely true. And in fact, organizers admit that a speaker at their conference described pedophilia as a condition some people are born with. I know, weird. And now, if I'm saying weird, it's weird. So now we have medical professionals saying that pedophiles are born that way, that the gods made them that way, that they can't stop one no matter how hard they try, and you've got a problem with them, that your problem is not with the person who wants to rape kids, but the gods or God who made them that way. So when we're talking about this and we're bringing all of this up and we're talking about molds and how people think, and do pedophiles deserve sexual rights with children? I'm hearing crickets. I think it's good that I'm hearing crickets right now. So one by one, as our sexual taboos have been falling, according to our pop culture, premarital sex is now pretty normal. And what used to be called back in 1964, and back when I was a kid, which wasn't 64, but closer to the 80s, self-abuse, because my grandma used to call it that. So what used to be called self-abuse is now served by the vast world of internet pornography. So sadomasochism has become the topic of best-selling romance novels. And instead of homosexuality being considered a psychological and moral problem, hence 1964, disapproving of homosexuality is considered a psychological problem. Homophobia and a moral problem, hate, right? But few taboos remain, kind of for now. While sex with underage children is still considered a heinous offense, which I'm glad of, but revelations of child sexual abuse in churches is no less, still fill a lot of public with outrage, which we're still fighting fights, which I thought were over in the 90s. But I came up with this article, according to Stella Mirabito, on her, she had a Federalist article, called the Pedophile Project. And a movement actually began to legitimize and legalize pedophilia. This person cites magazine articles in which pedophiles, celibate pedophiles, they hasten to say that they give their testimonial bidding for sympathy, but were born this way. like I said, once again, we got another doctor saying that they're born this way. We can't help our desires that we are objects of hate. Now, Mirabito also cites academic articles arguing that the sex between children and adults is not harmful and that pedophilia is simply a sexual orientation. Classifying pedophilia in that way is being considered also by the American Psychological Association in its authoritative diagnostic and statistical manual of mental disorders, stay with me, that Mirabito points out that sexual orientation is a protected category under the nation's civil rights laws. Well, we don't really have any civil rights laws under it, just on the basis of sex only. And everything else is shadowed in articles. So thus, if pedophilia is officially classified as a sexual orientation, pedophiles would enjoy the same legal protections that the LGBTQI communities individually receive. Okay? Social exceptions of pedophilia may come not so much from new sympathies for adults who want to have sex with children, but from the notion that children, too, should have the right to have sex if they want to, which I think is not okay. Children are already being sexualized, guys, in the fashion industry, the entertainment media, and even in schools. Primary school children, long before the advent of puberty, are being identified as gay. The medical profession is being complicit, along with psychologists and even parents, in giving puberty blockers and sex change operations to children and adolescents, constituting malpractice and child abuse on a mass scale. They're also forcing children into sexual molds. Now, Mirabito quotes calls to lower or eliminate the age of consent. This is why it's really important, y'all, that you listen and you weigh in for the good or for the bad, and that you remember to read things and vote when they're posted to vote, please. It's really, really important because people are slipping in stuff all the time. To protect your families, you need to know about this stuff. Because in her quote, Mirabito says, after all, if consent is what makes sexual relations moral, then if children want to have sex, then they should be allowed to, which I think is wrong. But that's me. It's my opinion. I think it's wrong. The statutory rape laws say that a person under the age of 18, at least in my state and in the state I'm born in and from, Washington, the statutory rape laws say that a person under 18 is legally incapable of consent and are surely oppressive to young people. Now, if an adolescent child consents to having sex with a person of whatever age, so the arguments go, surely he or she should have the right. So if the age of consent, guys, is eliminated for children, there will be plenty of adults eager to secure that consent. Now, with persuasion, gifts, and seduction, puppies, whatever, I mean, we can joke about it all we want, but it doesn't make it right. And we will see exploitation and abuse and more trauma on a grand, unparalleled scale. The children would have zero protection. They already really kind of don't now. The only thing that stops them is laws that say that you're not that you're under the age of consent or the under the age of 18. So, like I said, if you want more, read Stella Mirabito's article and go through and see what she actually had to say, because I am still reeling over how she really felt about and being a woman myself, and I identify as a earthling. I'm an earthling, even though my mom still thinks that my family is actually going to come get me from outer space, and I really believe that. I'd like to believe that, actually. But I'm a human female from Earth. I'm an earthling. We're all earthlings that dwell here. So you need to think about your fellow man. Period. And remember to vote, and remember to look at all of the articles that come up for voting. If you don't like something, you have the right to vote against it, or call your local congressperson and find out more about something so that you can change it before it becomes a law or disappears. So in order for us to improve our understanding, to improve the rights that we have, to keep the rights that we have, let's say. Just because you identify as a male or a female doesn't exclude you from having to care about other people and how they identify, because I would be willing to bet money that it will affect you directly one way or another. No matter how you vote, for the good or for the bad, it will affect you directly. So this is important, people. It's very important. So in being human, to improve sexual health, and even in this, our highly charged political environment, necessitates going beyond biomedical approaches and requires meaningful addressing of sexual rights and sexual pleasure. In a world where possible and positive intersections between sexual health and sexual rights and sexual pleasure are reinforced in law. And what I'm going to touch on is advocacy and rights and stepping in and understanding that even if you don't have somebody who's handicapped in your home or somebody who's handicapped in your family, that people still have needs. And those needs and rights should be protected. That just because somebody is perceived as, or even diagnosed as, being mentally incapacitated doesn't mean that they shouldn't have sexual rights. Now, Canada has gone so far with having, as of almost 3 years ago now, putting in place sexual surrogacy for people who qualify for it. I know, interesting. I didn't even know about that until recently. That I thought it was just like, oh, I thought it was just kind of like a Snopes thing or a Reddit thing. And I'm like, oh, no, it's a real thing. That as progressive as Canada, I mean, my best friend's Canadian, so, is that they've actually brought into place protection for surrogacy for people who are incapacitated physically or mentally or both. And the reason I got into that is because of trying to find out how people go about their rights. And because back in the dark ages, as far as 64, people were getting sterilized, like legally. People were being taken in and being sterilized because they thought that it was bad to spread their seed into the universe because they had a mental or physical problem that could be passed to somebody else. Do we deserve the right to come down and say that it's okay to do that to somebody who might be dreaming of having a family one day, even if it's to try to have a family, to shoot down their ideals of what they think a family would be for them, because we think that for some reason they don't deserve it, that they should be sterilized because they're not normal, because everybody else is so normal. Some of these people don't get a chance to have any kind of sexual relation or have relationships because people are too far removed from reaching out and interacting with people who might have a disability of some kind. Maybe an outward disability that people think might be scary to them, let's say, for lack of better terminology, that I'd reach out to that person, but you don't understand that that person has Tourette's and they're in a wheelchair and they have a lot of other problems, but that person still has feelings. That person still has, maybe on the inside, wants you to come over and say hi, give a hug or a handshake, say, tell them your name, things like that. just because somebody is outwardly different doesn't make them different than you in a lot of regards. Just saying. But for some of you who probably saw the movie in 2012, The Sessions, which was a very interesting movie, and by the way, in case you're easily offended or have children in the house, you might want to make sure that there isn't anything in there, like make sure your parental locks and stuff are on, or make sure the kids are in bed. But the 2012 movie, The Sessions, was based on an essay by Mark O'Brien, who was a poet who was paralyzed from the neck down due to polio, who in his 40s hired a sex surrogate to have as his first sexual experience. And Helen Hunt does a beautiful job of playing the role of a sensitive, intelligent, trained sexual surrogate. And John Hawkes plays the role of the physically disabled, talented, educated poet. Now, the movie did rekindle interest in the controversial topic of surrogate partner therapy, which I had read of a long time ago, like pre his movie and everything, but I didn't realize it was this in depth. And the original concept was developed and studied by Masters and Johnson in their work Human Sexual Inadequacy in 1970. Now, with as many issues related to sex, this is a highly controversial topic. While sexual surrogacy was popular and practiced in the 70s and 80s, the idea of psychotherapists, marriage and family therapists, social workers, counselors, and mental health professionals referring clients to surrogate partner therapy blows people's minds. Like, why would you spend money on that? Why would we put our tax dollars into that? Well, people are paying out of their pocket. It's not paid for. Counseling is paid for. Certain types of counseling is paid for. But the actual act of sexual surrogacy, that's a different thing. Now, excuse me. I am wanting to understand more, which I invite you to understand more about the parameters and how our programming works in our brains to try to think around how people react sexually and how people understand emotionally and socially to these things. Because we took sex from being some act that we never spoke about because babies were found in the cabbage patch back when my grandmother was a baby, to when my mother was a baby, they kind of talked about it in the 50s, but they didn't really, it wasn't an outward topic. And then we get to the 60s and 70s and 80s where it starts to loosen up a little bit. And now from, I would say, the late 80s to the little after 2008, we're getting serious with this. Because people are starting to make snap judgments and not understanding that this is a big hot ball of wax that you can't just shove into a shiny little metal box and lock every time it's uncomfortable for you. That you need to give it time and maybe me read about some stuff and try to figure out how to make sense of it. Because I, like myself, in order for me to understand some things, I actually have to go to books. I need to go to books, read about it, make sure I can wrap my head about it, so that I can talk about it and understand it in order to give it to you to understand talking to somebody and understand where they're coming from. Because I'm not just going to shoot somebody down because they're militant about the way they believe. People believe certain things as their own personal truth.
Get to the 60s and 70s and 80s
where it starts to loosen up a little bit.
Let's say somebody had a super bad experience and they became a militant, this and that.
I would say the late 80s to the
based on
the little after
their life experiences. And now that is their truth. We can't take that truth away from them. Pray that truth away from them.
Because
wish that truth away from them. It's them.
People are starting to make snap judgments.
Love them for it.
And not understanding that this is a big hot ball of wax.
Even if we don't entirely agree with it.
You can't just shove into a shiny little metal box and lock
it. You have to tolerate.
It's uncomfortable for you.
It's like being at Thanksgiving with your Aunt Edna.
Give it time.
We don't like Aunt Edna.
And maybe
bring her to too many family functions because she always says the wrong thing. She talks about politics
how to make sense of it.
In a way that makes everybody hate like her myself, before we even have salad.
In order for me to understand some things, I actually have to
She's
go to
She's a super hateful
books.
Person.
I need to go to books, read
but
about
But we love her,
it,
right?
Sure I can wrap
and why
my
do
head
we love
about
her?
It
because
so that
Aunt
I can
Edna,
talk about it and understand it Aunt in order to get it to you to understand
part of our
talking
family.
To somebody
we can't get another Aunt Edna
and
if we just knock her out
from.
And just
I'm not
drag her out the street
somebody
say
down because they're militant about the way they
see you again.
People
she's still
Aunt
Edna, even
certain things
though
as their own personal
she's hateful and we don't like her very much, but we still love her.
Let's say somebody had
so
a
why can't
bad
we take that concept
and they became a militant this and that?
I would say
they became a militant this too, but based on the little after life experience.
I don't
now
like
that
you very much,
truth.
But I don't like that.
We can't take that truth away from them. Crave that truth away from them. Because
wish that truth away from them.
I love the humanity.
It's them.
Or
people are
find something that you like about
them.
Like, oh yeah, it's
not
something you like.
This is a big hot
even
ball
if you don't entirely agree with them.
Just
like when you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all.
You have to.
Oh yeah, I like your shirt.
You.
It's like being at
that.
You
don't have to like what's happening.
Give
it
time.
We don't like it.
Still have manners.
Read
too many
things.
Hissing and wailing and making everybody else
politics.
Look
how to
like
make sense of it. I like
her
myself.
Have salad.
In order
not
for me to understand some things, I actually
a
have
lot
to go
of super hateful person.
I need to go to books, read
but
about
or they think her, right?
So
no. And why
do
you love
it
her? Or,
so
or
I can
you know these people. You've got, probably got one
in
order
to
get
to
you. Maybe. I know I've got at least three in mind.
Talking to somebody,
you know these people you love around, but they're regular ostrich.
They're
freaking out
about
you again.
She's
still
Aunt Edna,
even though
you're
both on me. She's hateful, and we don't like her very much. Take a sip of water and breathe.
Use
a wet mouth and up your nose
slowly. And they became a
and understand and say that other people's truths are not there for us to judge.
I
don't like you. Even if it directly affects us,
we can't take
it. Sometimes we have to choose our battles. But it's your life.
Away from them.
Because
that truth away from
them. As hard of a concept as that is, or find something to make
about
them. With everything that we have, right?
Even if we don't entirely
well, I don't like this because you can't say something nice, don't say anything
at
all.
I'm
just
going
to make an example.
Oh, yeah,
I don't
true.
Like to
it's
make
like being at
too
that.
Fun
of
a point on explaining what's happening. Well, that's not very Christian cordial.
We don't like it.
Still having
it.
I'm just going to say as a standard. Well, that's not very Christian.
Wailing
and making what is very Christian.
Politics.
Look
how to
like
make sense of it. I like
her judging is a very Christian.
In order for me to understand some things, I actually have to go to
a hateful
person.
I
need to go to
just gonna say, or that's not very
Christian,
or that's too much
Christian.
You know these people. You've got probably got
an
hour or two. Maybe. I know I've got at least three.
I'm
not going to follow people. You know more people. You love around what they are. And that was just an example. I'm not a hateful Christian. My mom's a Christian. So,
but that's
a lot you hear a lot. You can't tell me that you haven't been out of down the corner where you have friends. Well, that's not very neighborly. Or that's not very nice. That's not very nice. Well,
sometimes
we have not required to be nice, but you're required to be cordial.
It's them.
Or not be salty.
It's them.
With everything that we have, right? But like you said, you need to realize
with
sports programs, which I'm all for sports. It keeps people up, doing things that maybe they probably shouldn't do. And it keeps kids healthy. Sports programs keep kids healthy about what they are. And that was just an example. But arts programs make kids think. So, leveling the playing field with your head,
but that's a lot you hear a lot,
and realizing that you haven't been out even if you are a male or a female, that there's much more to that than meets the eye.
That's not very nice.
That's not very nice.
Well,
so, think why not understanding that you're required to be our sexual health, our understanding of not being politics involved with everything that we have, right? But like you said, and
ethics require meaningful addressing to the sexual rights and sexual pleasure. In a world where positive law intersections between sexual health and sexual rights and pleasure are actually reinforced in certain contexts, but it's only whispers, like it's little segments of pieces of, and then we don't have to just say splog. Like, it's foreshadowed by this and that. We have thou shalt this law pro law. It's like, oh, the experience of people everywhere, really. What's also does is requires a clear understanding of what interconnection of these concepts means in good practice, as well as conceptualizing personal and systemic approaches that fully recognize and address the harms that get inflicted on people's lives and mental health. These interactions are not fully taken into account. Bridging the conceptual health of our understanding, we are just wanting small. What all of this is by our meaningless hot moments and the influence and intersections of these concepts and then it's just sexual rights where comprehensive attention can lead to stronger laws and policies and processes through sexual health actions requires attention to political currents and social movements within countries as well as at really low levels, as this influence requires understanding of what legal and in good practice policies as well as in people's jobs and other places working besides the workplace. You're going to other places out in real life. And the impact that these have on people's lived experience are just their human experience of their sexuality, their sexual health, their sexual rights, and pleasure of these concepts as inadequate support in an area where comprehensive attention can have negative effects on everything else that gets processed. So what I'm saying is that all of the efforts should be made to implement a large triangle of health rights and making sure that it's easy for people to ascertain all of these health and rights. All of one health actions everywhere in the world, movements, not just as well as but everywhere on the world. Just because somebody is afraid in people's jobs and in fear with certain things or your just workplace, basically uncomfortable with someone's sexual identity, it doesn't outgive in real life, so less valid. Or their causes and the empathy as well. What is that experience? A simple human right to basic rights. All of their sexuality, considering the current political moments with representations occurring everywhere, as it outlets to global public area, increased conservatism, and you'll have corners that affect, let alone shrinking spaces in civil society. We need to move beyond fear and negativity in all aspects of our misunderstanding of health rights and move into. Set out to ensure that it's positive highlights and try to make examples of how one health everywhere and rights and all of this come together. I guess you can't have health and rights without law. You have to have it all together. Just because they all have been on this pyramid with certain work have been and can't be jointly addressed, and they should be addressed. for us all as part of someone's sexuality. And it's worth saying also that sexual health has been, at least for almost all activists, both global and national spaces, a legitimizing way to address sexual rights and law. Sexual health and rights as an entry point allows engagement not only with the health sectors, but with people who engage in writing law and other policies who might not otherwise be sympathetic to the importance of those rights. Now, the term sexual space is sexual rights, which people probably go, we need a faucet every time I say that. All aspects of sexual rights, sexual health, and sexual rights laws, right, have been used in very novel ways by many technical and political actors engaged in right work to ensure clarity, right, health everywhere. Sexual health is actually stated as a state of physical, emotional, mental health, and social well-being in relation to sexuality. It isn't merely the absence of disease, dysfunction, or infirmity. Sexual health requires a positive and respectful approach to sexuality and sexual relationships, as well as the possibility of having endless same-sexual encounters and experiences free of coercion, discrimination, and vital to address sexual rights. And for sexual health to be attained and maintained, the sexual rights of all persons must be respected, not only protected, and fulfilled. Now, sexuality is described by not otherwise as a central aspect of being human. Now, the term identities as a whole, sexual orientation, pleasure, intimacy, reproduction, sexuality is experienced and expressed in thoughts, fantasies, desires, beliefs, attitudes, values, behaviors, practices, roles, and relationships. While sexuality can be included in all of these dimensions, not all of them are always experienced or expressed. Sexuality is influenced by health, is actually interaction of biological, psychological, social, economic, political, cultural, legal, historical, religious, and spiritual factors, and sexual rights require the application of existing human rights to sexuality and sexual health, as well as constituting sexual rights. Sexual rights protect all people's rights to fulfill and express their sexuality and enjoy sexual health with due regard for the rights of others and through the framework of protection against discrimination. Now, and I go down, you know, sexual pleasure is also described. If you don't know what sexual pleasure is, this is what it's actually described to be as per identities. I'll tell you in a second. Sexual pleasure is the physical and psychosocial, psychological satisfaction and enjoyment derived from solitary or shared erotic experiences, including thoughts, feelings, autoeroticism, self-determination, sense, safety, privacy, confidence, the ability to communicate and negotiate sexual relations that are key enabling factors for pleasure to contribute to sexual health and well-being. So sexual pleasure should be exercised within the context of sexual rights, particularly the rights to equality and non-discrimination, autonomy, and bodily integrity, to have the right to the highest attainable standards of sexuality and sexual health. Experiences of human sexual pleasure are diverse, and sexual rights are to ensure that pleasure is a positive experience for all concerned and not obtained by violating other people's rights and well-being. So, just so that you know, all of this is actually defined rather vaguely, by the way, which I kind of tippy-toed through and kind of made my own process there. And I go down, as you can see, because it was there to be next, by the World Health Organization, or the WHO, in a 1975 technical report. Just so that the World Health Organization and other non-governmental institutions that would like things done, such as International Planned Parenthood Federation, as well as other important implications also for the approach of two sexual health taken by the national government and civil society activists with respect to sexual rights. Now, arguably, to this day, no language has actually been as important as the political articulation in the 1995 Beijing Platform for Action from the 4th World Conference on Women. Now, paragraph 96, which sits in the health, and this was from the Platform for Action in Beijing, which is an open document that you can read yourself if you want to Google it, states, the human rights of women include the right to decide freely and responsibly on all matters related to their sexuality, free of coercion or discrimination and violence. Essential in providing the first time an international mandate to focus on and invest in women's reproductive and sexual health beyond the need to control women's fertility as a part of a demographic agenda, and grounded within the internationally agreed other human rights framework. This remains, despite obvious limitations, such as the strongest statement agreed to by the governments of the world. Now, beyond the articulation of the comprehensive sexual and reproductive health and rights agendas since the Cairo and Beijing articulations, the reality within countries at the global level has actually been a siloed approach, with reproductive health and at times reproductive rights higher on donor and policymaker agenda, whether driven by demographic trends, fertility control, ignorance, or discrimination. Even when the language is used, the limits to meaningful interaction between work to support sexual rights and reproductive rights is also embedded in this movement. The politics, however, on many movements, including women's health rights, disability rights, and reproductive health and rights movements, have tended to neglect issues of sexuality and sexual pleasure. Now, likewise, those working on sexual rights have more often than not stayed away from reproductive health and rights in their advocacy work for, well, I hate that word. I chose the wrong word. Just basically for political reasons. And that's why that doesn't really do what it needs to do. So during the HIV/AIDS movement and the ways in which it brought focus to the rights of key populations, including sexual and reproductive rights, has been the most useful in helping the Catholics greater engagement between movements, constitutions, and those driving HIV prevention program to address sexual health and sexual rights more comprehensively, even as pleasure has rarely been a part of these conversations. Now, in addition, we need to add, in parallel to the global women's health and rights movement, LGBTIQ movements, trans and intersex rights mobilization, youth mobilizing on sexual and reproductive health and rights, advocacy programmatic work for sex workers' rights, and the disability rights movement have started to force attention to taboos, stigma, discrimination, and human rights violations, and led to broader recognition of human rights related to sexuality, sexual health, and more broadly, for all people. Now, the fact is that this focus has been on harms and not pleasure, and in some ways shaped the discourse for, nevertheless, the result has been an increase in comprehension on understanding of sexual rights as human rights. Relevant to sexuality and sexual health, this has been growing understanding has been reflected on the work of the World Health Organization and other United Nations agencies such as, well, the UNAIDS, the UN Population Office Fund, the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, and their other outer agency statements. For example, on focused sterilization, which we touched on. Elimination of discrimination in healthcare settings and elimination of violence and discrimination against people of the LGBTI people, as well as the work of international non-governmental organizations such as the IPPF, the World Association for Sexual Health, whose work has contributed significantly to the understanding and acknowledgement of sexual rights internationally. Now, issued a revised Declaration of Sexual Rights in 2014-15, and an accompanying technical, this is a doozy technical document, guys.
it's a doozy. Taking on a comprehensive approach to sexual rights as human rights from a multidisciplinary perspective, and importantly, with great attention to pleasure as an element of sexual health and sexual rights. See, ball of wax, pyramid, right? Civil society organizations internationally, regionally, and locally, such as the CREA, Sexual Rights Initiative, and the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights and Scholarly Initiatives, with strong focus on advocacy, such as Sexuality Policy Watch, have contributed enormously to the advancement of sexual rights in the international, regional, national, and local political spheres. Now, sexual pleasure is the newest arrival on the sexual health and sexual rights policy, and the whole of the landscape anyway. The least developed and potentially the most open to interpretation. Outside the context of sexology, the study of sexual pleasure, when it has occurred, has generally had a narrative, non-normative bias, addressing pleasure throughout a default focus on adults and within marriage, mostly, including in medical textbooks and sex education. Now, pleasure most frequently emerges in policies and programming as a consideration relevant to sexuality or sexual health rather than as a topic in its own right. Rights-based operational definitions of sexual pleasure in the context of sexual health and more broadly have been sorely lacking. The World Association for Sexual Health, or the WAS, has noted and has been perhaps the most forward-looking in recognizing the linkages between pleasure, rights, and health, our pyramid, right, as a professional association with a global relevance as far back as 2008 in actuality. It urged all governments, international agencies, private sector, academic institutions, if I could talk today, and society at large, to recognize pleasure as a component of holistic health and well-being, and has since urged various actors to recognize the importance of pleasure in research policy and service delivery, and connected to sexual rights, not only from the free from violence perspective, but from the perspective of positive sexuality. It has also initiated expert consultations with the World Health Organization and other relative organizations to urge them to adopt definitions of sexuality, sexual health, sexual rights, which recognize pleasure as a central element of those definitions. Now, inspired by those in the WAS articulations that we talked about earlier, we adopt the working definition of our pleasure, but put forward on the Global Advisory Board for Sexual Health and Well-Being. So the links between all of these things, where we have our little pyramids, we have rights, right? Health, or health, rights, and pleasure. So all of these things, we need to have an understanding of it. We don't need physical workings of it, because some things we just don't need to know about. But sex, I mean, it's something that people think about intermittently, even if you think, oh, no, Seraphine, I don't. Well, yeah, you do. You think about it. We all think about it. We're born with it. It's something that we came from. Without sex, we wouldn't be sitting here, even though I know there's other ways to create children now. But most of us were born from female people. And it's just amazing that we would have to diagram ourselves out this far to think that we might be learned and academic and so bright and shiny as a species, but yet we really still dragging our knuckles in a lot of ways. When you really think about it, we have all these antiquated thoughts and processes and laws and documentations and ways that people just don't think about it. And I know you may be sitting in your home, you may be sitting in your car, wherever you are, you can't help but think about it. How it affects you.
how you deserve rights just as much as the next person does. And you think, oh, no, nobody, it's nobody's business. They're not going to know. Not going to know. Well, when you think of psychosocial and you think of psychologists and biologists and neurophysicists and things like that, they've already got it down. They know that you think about sex because we're all at base animals. And what do animals do? They procreate, they eat, they go to the bathroom and they sleep. And then they wake up in the morning and they do it all again with all these other things that we do. But one thing's for sure, at some point, you're going to procreate or you're going to try or you're going to have fun trying, right? So do people know about it? Yeah. Are they interested to know more about it? Yes. Why would they want to know about it? Because some people want to know because they want to protect your rights, and other people want to know because they're nosy. Well, I want to make sure that your rights are protected. I don't need to know about it. I already know it happens. Because I know when a cow and a chicken love each other very much, you get cow chickens or cat dog. I'm just joking. You got to lighten up. Lighten up. Got to lighten up and have fun and think about it. And, you know, this is a lot to take in, but it's really not when you think about it, because you're around it all day, you're with yourself. And who better to think about this stuff or bounce it off the wall before you talk about it to anybody else is yourself. What are you going to do? How are you going to feel? Do you feel anything about how people think about rights? Do you believe that you have all the rights that you need? And I'm not talking beyond the norms of whatever you think is normal. I'm talking about just general. Don't need to check a box. How are you doing? Say, self, how are you doing? Do I have enough rights? Are my rights protected? Do you know that if your rights are protected? Like I said, I bounced this off somebody the other night and they're like, didn't even know who Ruth Bader Ginsburg was. And that's kind of important. Well, at least to me, because, and I don't think that she should be any more important to you unless you're really interested in the process, but starting out with feminism and not even base feminism, but feminine rights, believing that you need rights to make sure that you are not taken advantage of any way, shape, or form, is a genuine base human right, a right that some of us still don't have. When people are still trying to figure out whether or not we should have the rights on our bodies, that we should have the rights to decide certain things. And you know what I'm talking about without putting too fine of a point on it. That you need to think about it and give it some time. And I'm not saying life-changing event here, but open up the table to discuss where things could be better. People could get along better. People wouldn't be misunderstanding. Or you would understand that Aunt Edna loves you. She just has a really weird way of showing it. And even though she talks hateful stuff in politics around the table at Thanksgiving and makes everybody want to leave, you still love her. This is no different. You can love that person or give love to them. You know, you don't have to love them, but, you know, I'm saying basic. Handshake, hold the door open, be cordial. Intolerant. I mean, if you have to say your piece, try to be a little diplomatic about it, or say maybe some people are open to discussion. Why don't you say, like me, hey, I don't understand this concept. Can you explain it to me? And I did that recently with a friend who's going to go through a change, through a sexual reassignment. And I'm like, well, why would you do that to yourself? And it's because I didn't understand. And it's not what you're thinking. It's completely different. But I'm like, please explain it to me because I don't understand how you would do this and be this. And it really helped me to use my own thought processes, formulate a conversation dialogue with my friend, who, when I said it, I'm like, you don't have to tell me, but it would help me understand better if you could tell me how you came to this decision and why it means so much to you. And I'm not here to judge. I just want to understand it. Because I've never been in that position, just like you may not have been in that position, but maybe you have, or you are. There's no judgment. We can observe without judging. And sure, at some point there might be a little tiny bit of judgment, but it may or may not happen. But what's the worst thing the person can say to you is like, I don't know your business, then you're just going to have to drop it. But maybe there's going to come a time where you can find out more about that one topic that really bothers you. It really bothers you. And you say, I want to know more about this because it bothers me. Maybe there's something I'm not getting. And that's where I came to a lot of these things that I share with you guys. Is that it didn't make sense to me. And so I had to bring myself to a point where it made more sense, because otherwise I'm not being fair. And part of my everything that makes me is I'd like to see things be at least fair, because that's what we owe. We owe it to be fair and just. Everybody wants a piece of the pie. Everybody wants a fair shake. Why I don't understand why we can't try. We can at least try to say that we tried. Or I can try. I can honestly say that I tried. I tried to give. And I think that I did a good job of understanding for myself how the process works, to watch for laws coming across the table, make sure that understand how the laws are worded. Which there's actually document sites that help you if you can't understand the legal jargon or how they're actually written out. Or call your congresspeople if you can't understand some things, because it's super, super important, y'all. It is important that you're able to understand things that you don't understand. And yes, I know there's a lot of things out there that you're not supposed to get all the puzzle pieces to. You're just not. And that's a universe thing. We're not meant to have all the keys to the castle. We're just not. But we're going to keep chasing them till we get to that fine point that we're going to be closer, that one step closer. And today, talking about the things that could come back and have us not entirely understand or understand, it's better that we try to end in a point of understanding. All right. For some reason, I had a technical issue there. Not exactly sure what happened. But thank you for holding in and hanging on there with that glitch. But
when we don't even try to understand anymore, that's when a lot of things lose our grasp. When we cut ourselves off because it's too much to take. And I understand some people have, and actually not even some people, a lot of people have issue with even broaching the subject of gender identity and sexuality, because sometimes sexuality is such a hard thing to understand, an uncomfortable thing to understand, that I get it. Some people just, and it's your right. If you don't want to talk about it, you don't have to talk about it. You don't need to discuss it. And if it ekes you out that much, but I encourage you, if you have stuff to work out, that you try to work it out for yourself, so that over time you can get on a even keel with your entire self and be that pyramid, that enclosed pyramid of self, and understand yourself at base. And I'm not saying that I've got all the answers and I've got myself completely together, but I definitely try. And all of the things that I've been through, all the things that I've seen, that I definitely try to get rid of as many hang-ups as I've tried to over my lifetime. And I know that it's hard, because some people, it's easier to put things away rather than address them. Sweep it under the rug. But we can't afford to do that anymore, because things will get way out of control. And should it be fluid? I won't say that it should be absolutely fluid. There has to be parameters for any law to take effect and be worth its salt, right? In order to do and be all of these things as a global dynamic, we need to shed some of our shadow of freak out, let's say, that freak out level of, no, I don't want to talk about it, it's freaking me out. Because like I tell my mom, and you got to feel sorry for this poor woman, it's her birthday tomorrow, by the way, her birthday. And I always tell her, I'm like, you may not like it, but you have to listen and understand. If you're going to hate something, you can't genuinely hate something unless you understand it. And most people hate things because they either fear them, had a bad association with them, or you think that it's something that it may not be. So, like I said, the basic on that is to find a way to fulfill the gaps in your process mentally with knowledge that will help you. I mean, knowledge that you can meet on your end that will help you understand. Like, let's bring up the political conflicts that we have right now. Just say, I don't understand why this happened with Trump. Well, look it up. Go to Trump's website, the President of the United States, and find out what happened at how long now? And find out what happened and formulate an opinion, because most people don't know exactly what happened, just that it happened and they don't like it. Well, I encourage you to know what you're talking about before you hate it entirely, number one. And number two, I mean, there has to be a little bit of gained love and respect. Like, you may not enjoy, let's say, the person that we have in office right now, but you still need to respect at some point or level that it is the person who is running your country. For the good or the bad of it, you need to have some level of respect. I mean, if you were president of the country, put yourself in that person's shoes. Would you be wanting all of the, and no, I'm not saying you would act like that, because you would not, most likely, because we're all different. We all do different things, and so does the President of the United States do different things. So I don't seek to crucify people. I seek to understand them. And this is a little different take. I would rather understand something entirely
to, at least to the best of my definition of knowledge, then take a baseball bat to it because I don't like it. Just flat out don't like it. That's my answer. No, I can't just not like it. I need to find out more about it. And that's where we're at. This is how I understand things. This is how I get things to you and how I would like to see things go forward. And it's just amazing. Excuse me, hiccups here. That things just keep going and going and going. Whether we want them to or not, life happens. Situations happen. We can either run around with our hands in the air, flitting them about, going, oh my gosh, or we can put our hands down, put our hands on the keyboard and look some stuff up, or we crack a book, we go to the library, and see about it, read about it. Or if you've got a friend, you have a friend or something. Do we have a caller? I thought I heard something in the background. It could be tripping. I've got something that fell off the table just a little while ago. So, but anyway, with the policies and the things on the table and then the climate that we're in and people reassigning and not wanting to form, we're in an ever-changing everything. Everything changes on a dime, but even faster now. So we can choose to stagnate and not go forward, or we can choose to embrace. You don't have to embrace it wholeheartedly. You don't have to give it a big old bear hug. Like I said, you could church hug on that and go, well, I don't agree with it, but at least I'm starting to understand why this is the way it is. And give it a general, okay. You don't have to be fine with it. You can be okay with it now that you understand. Or pose more questions. You can say, well, now that you said that, maybe I have more questions. Because you could have more questions. You just never know. Because laws and policies really do matter. They matter because they set rules and framework for conduct in society and for intervention into society. They can contribute or obstruct the development of services and delivery of interventions on health or deter or support people's experience of pleasure or enable or disable people to seek and receive the information they require to protect their sexual health and exercise their sexual rights. Legal frameworks can also have content that respects and protects human rights. For example, those that provide access to comprehensive sexuality education or give equal opportunities in all areas of life for people, regardless of sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression and age. Now, on the other hand, laws also may create limitations to sexual health, such as those that do not address or allow adolescents or unmarried people to access health services without parental or spousal consent. This happens a lot of places in the world, by the way. Further criminalization of certain behaviors and identities, which we talked about earlier, has greatly limited the ways in which sexual laws, pleasure, and everything has found expression in policy and law. And in addition, the emergence of adolescence as a category of people requiring intervention has actually put a focus on the prevention of harms in legal frameworks, including early marriage, early pregnancy, and childbirth, etc., and largely ignored by positive attentions to their sexuality and rights. The stigma associated with premarital sex and the moral panic that actually accompanies conversations about young people's, particularly young women's, sexuality is profound and deeply ingrained in policy. Now, advancements to address these issues often have to deal with backlash and opposition, while social cultural taboos in relation to sexuality are often embedded in laws and policies with negative effects on sexual health and pleasure. Now, for example, laws that penalize and criminalize sexual health-related matters such as same-sex or sexual acts and behaviors, transgendered expression, sex work, HIV transmission, possession of a condom as evidence of a crime, and penalization of advertisement of contraception or abortion basically codify a restricted approach to morality and reinforce power structures that control the bodies and behaviors of marginalized and discriminated against populations. Now, the burden of unjustified or use of criminal and punitive laws as a significant to certain population groups, such as gay, lesbian, and transgendered people, women, adolescents, people engaged in sex work, and those living with HIV can experience difficulties in accessing relevant services to them, let alone engaging in positive sexual experiences with direct impacts on health and rights. Now, controlling, undermining, restricting, and medicalizing sexual needs and desires for certain populations can result in coercive law policies. Yeah. And practices. For example, the desires, pleasure, and sexual health and rights needs of people living with disabilities, like we talked about, including with intellectual disabilities, are still often undetermined or watched over, understood, and controlled through forced sterilization policies still in a lot of countries. It's not done in America as much as it used to be, which I'm glad for, but it still needs to stop in certain, you know, in practices, inaccessibility of sexuality and sexual health information in doctors and other services. So people with disabilities are often infantilized. You know, people think that they're just don't understand their babies. They can't understand through the laws that have been written or passed over through policy and held to be asexual or in some cases hypersexual. Their pleasure irrelevant and at best incapable of reproduction and unfit for sexual marriage partners or unfit as parents, which is in my book wrong to think of, but this is what has happened in law and policy. Now, for women, disability may mean legal exclusion from a life of partnership and active sexuality and denial of opportunities for motherhood. Now, these laws, policies, and controlling practices undermine the equal rights of people with disabilities, their need for access to information and services, their desires, and wanting to have, you know, reproduction rights and parenting rights, while laws and policy and written policy should be sent in such a way that they respect human rights and acknowledge sexual health and law and right as a basic human need. Because many laws that are set within the intention to protect can end up being discriminatory and coercive by, for example, not recognizing non-binary gendered bodies, same-sex sexual practices, or the sexual desires of people under the age of 18 years old. For example, rape laws that do not recognize rape in marriage or consider any sexual act to be rape if it occurs with a person under the age of 18 years old, or recognize only vaginal penetration as a penis as rape. Now, this excludes many people from the spectrum of protection. So we need to think about that. So the application of the triangle, like our pyramid, like I said, the pyramid approach to rights, laws and health require not only careful thought and analysis, but also amendment of laws and policy to ensure that they do not discriminate and that they respect the rights-based definitions of rights and health and pleasure. So some positive is actually starting to occur on international and national levels. For example, the World Health Organization initiated changes to the international classification of diseases that has led to the International Policy on Classification of Diseases and Health Condition. Now, the ICD greatly influences not only the utilization of services and insurance code, but the setting and implementation of national law and international law in some places. Standards of care, medical services, other services, education, and research, according to the World Health Organization, elaborated a new chapter for the ICD called Conditions Related to Sexual Health that brings a more holistic view to sexual health by connecting the body and the mind in relation to sexual functions and dysfunctions. De-psychopathologizing gender expression, eliminating any remaining codes related to sexual orientation. All of these changes are not only justified from the sexology and sexual health perspective, but also support sexual rights and different forms of pursuing consensual pleasure. Now, human rights bodies such as the UN for Human Rights Committee, the Committee Against Torture, and the European Court of Human Rights, as well as the National Constitutional Courts, have increasingly applied human rights standards, such as the rights to a non-discrimination freedom from inhuman and degrading treatment, human dignity, self-determination, and bodily integrity to various sexual and sexuality and sexual health related issues, with positive implications for both health and pleasure. These linkages, so the linkage between the two, are visible in their decision, though often related to the provision of health services on such issues as forced sterilization, involuntary surgeries on intersex and transgendered people, mandatory HIV testing, and access to health services, for example, in the cases of rape. These human rights are standards, in turn, are increasingly reflected both in public health policies and programs with positive implications for health, well-being, and pleasure, with particular attention to the protection of sexuality from the privacy perspective. So within the countries and laws, policies that decriminalize consensual sexual behaviors, eliminate mandatory medical interventions, provide people that are under the ages of 18 years old access to the sexual health educations or services, information and services that they require, by the way, serve as good examples of attention to the kinds of policies that we need to ensure the health, the well-being, and rights and pleasure for all Earth's populations. Now, historically, sexual health and rights laws have tended to focus on preventing negative consequences associated with sexuality, you know, such as prevention of pregnancy, HIV, STD, and treatment addressing sexual dysfunction. Now, the importance of addressing the negative consequences of sexual health behavior should not be minimized. In many cases, this approach really has failed to recognize that in some of the primary factors behind the sexual health risk, basically, and the need for sexual health information and services are issued that relate to rights, to law, and to health, and not to morbidities and mortalities. The fact that some people don't seek the assistance of sexual health providers until they face a negative consequence related to their sexual activity, such as an STI, erectile dysfunction, or other services that they need from governing health bodies, can reinforce the notion that the health provider's role is only to resolve these negative issues. So the majority of health services providers are not prepared to address the complicity of sexual pleasure, including the disassociation of safety and pleasure, and then the diverse ways in which it is experienced at different points of life, adolescence, adulthood, and older ages. Yes, seniors, we're talking about you too. And among different populations, for example, lesbians, gay men, transgender people, as well as people living with HIV, among others. Sexuality, sexual desire, and sexual pleasure remain subjects of shame and stigma in many parts of the world, with sexual health programs that only focus on unwanted consequences of sexual behavior, sexual morbidities, and normalized heterosexual sexual practices further contribute to stigmatization. So, like I said, we only fear or usually hate what we fear, or fear and stigmatize things because we don't understand them, like I said. So now we always skirt this to the side because we want to promote fear and have people controlled, but which is all well and good, but I don't think so. We need to not promote any more fear around the negative consequences of these sexual activities and leave important conversations about sexual health, sexual rights, and sexual pleasure. We can't keep leaving them to the side, guys. We have to talk about it. It's really important. I mean, it's vivid and in our faces every day. It's on TV. Even if you don't have TV, I don't have TV. I have internet, but it's still TV. So I'm listening to the radio. I'm listening to the people on my station. I'm listening to other casts that I have friends with or things like that. But sexuality is still there. Even in a sentence, it can change your life. I mean, it can change your mind too, completely. All of these examples that I have, just waves in the air, the belief, like in 1964, a lot of people were still thinking that sex wasn't immoral and reinforces traditional, you know, general norms, just like the idea that it's unacceptable for women to express sexuality or sexual pleasure, which people are still freaked out by to this day. Still. It's like, it's okay for dudes to go around and talk this or that or whatever, because they're like, oh yeah, boys will be boys. And, you know, but we're just supposed to mumble under our breath and go and not say anything out loud. It's just crazy. So, but if we promote the power that you have when you understand, the power of understanding, let's say, and make things more implemented and easily accessed and understood better, which I know is not going to happen in the next year, but we can move towards it. We can move towards individually understanding and without being gross. You don't have to be disgusting. You can sit and talk about it clinically like adults. We can be adults, right? And go, oh, and maybe shed some light on some things that maybe we didn't understand entirely, you know? Now, the power of pleasure approach has actually been implemented with a lot of successes in several countries in the last year and a half, such as Australia, Mozambique, and Cambodia, among others. Now, the triangle, like we said, my pyramid approach to sexual health programs and law, like reinitiating laws or instituting laws, puts pleasure in the center of the triangle as an element that is intrinsically really linked to sexual health and sexual rights. So we have our triangle, right? So we've got to grow from somewhere. Now we need to acknowledge and tackle the various risks associated with sexuality, not skirt those either, but without it reinforcing fear and shame. And keeping that pyramid approach could also be considered a sex positive approach to sexuality and health, and institutionalizing the laws and getting them in process and get people on to lives that could be more fulfilling for them and more understood, and have people not be flat by the wayside, not have ever having to experience anything because they can't, because other people deem that they shouldn't. Well, people shouldn't not be able to do something because that person over there in the corner who makes all the rules said no because that person can't do this or that or the other thing. That's completely unfair because that person doesn't have the power to tell that person in the corner making the laws that that wasn't okay. We can't make a judgment call on what that person feels. And we can't go individually. So we need to make this as fair as possible, starting with understanding. In order to make it fair and logical, we need to discuss it. We need to talk about it. Now, when we talk about counseling, we talk about understanding and having rights, making laws, making sure people get off on the right foot or even both feet. You know, you got to you got to give somewhere. Like I said, you got to have humor somewhere too. We got to have fun. Otherwise it's way too serious. So we got to get with the program here. We need to understand that we're not going to know everything. We're not going to have every experience. We're not going to understand because maybe we haven't had that experience. And maybe we're never going to understand. But the bottom line of this is that we can try. We can try to understand. We can try to get the education that we need to go forward. We can try to try. You don't have to make a promise, but we can at least crack and wrap our heads around things that we don't understand. And it doesn't have to be about sexual rights. And I thank you for listening to me and listening to my thoughts about the right to rights, because we really need to think about it. Because like I said, even people who are absolutely straight laced, straight as a pin in January in the ice, never going to think about any other thing except for the black and white male and female. And that's fine. That's you. That's absolutely okay. But it still pertains to you. Sexual rights still pertains to you. And the day that it stops pertaining to you, we're all doomed, because we all need each other's support for basic human right or rights of earthlings on the planet, however you identify. We all need to, for the good or for the bad of it, be for each other. Even if you're not making a grandstand, at least be in the backlight going, yeah, I may not understand it entirely, but I get it kind of. You know, got a really great shirt. Like I said, if you can't say something nice, yeah, shirt's nice. Like the unicorn, you know, something. Got to pick something. So with that, I end the top of my hour here. You have been listening to The Infinite Inquisition with Seraphine Hurley, and we were talking about sexual rights. And I will be roundtabling the subject tomorrow night on Tripping the Void from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern time, or from 10 to midnight Eastern, well, 9 to 11 Central time and 10 to 12 Eastern, if I could think straight for a second, with my best friend and co-host, Laurelie Podvin, whose show is tonight as well, The Angel Rock, if you want to catch her, and her partner, Del Lessie, before her with The Delicious Recipe, as well as The Angel Rock at 9 with Laurelie Podvin. I'm sure she's got some cool stuff. Up next, we also have Dr. John DeSalvo's The Science of Paranormal Hour with an awesome guest, Lon Milo Duquette, which we'll be interviewing today. And that's up right next if you want to stay tuned. Once again, thank you very much. Have a wonderful evening. This has been Seraphine Hurley with Infinite Inquisition. You can find me on all social media under Seraphine Hurley. You have an awesome week. We'll catch you tomorrow.
It's the final days of the Big Deal Clearance Event at Academy Sports and Outdoors. Get up to 75% off great gear across the store when you take an extra 50% off already reduced items. This event ends on Monday, so make sure to shop now before these deals are gone. Visit your local Academy store or academy.com to save big on the gear you need to have fun out there this year. Don't miss your last chance to get up to 75% off the best brands and styles in sports and outdoors.
This is no ordinary sub shop. This is Firehouse Subs.
Welcome to Firehouse!
Tired of overpriced lunches that underdeliver on flavor? Head to Firehouse Subs, where for a limited time, you can get a $4.99 choice sub. Choose from a medium smoked turkey, Virginia honey ham, or roast beef. They're custom-made hot subs at a price ready-made to make you smile. Just $4.99, only at Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives. Participating locations plus tax, limited time offer, prices may vary for delivery.